Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn.
This week on Meet and Three, we rethink surplus by exploring how innovators are promoting sharing mindsets and responding to excess in creative ways.
The whole life cycle of food would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter behind China and the United States if it were a country.
You know, in the age of COVID, where a lot of those institutional processors did grind to a halt and a lot of farms had to dump milk in Pennsylvania, even while supermarket cases were bare, the organic market stayed strong.
They source all of these ingredients, they do all of this work, and then they just boil it for a few minutes and then they throw it away.
Tune in to Meet and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Cooking in Mexico from A to Z. I'm your host, Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
Wonderful. Today, we're going to be talking about edible bugs in Mexican cooking, and we have the top authority in this subject matter. And let me tell you, we're going to have a lot of fun. We are so honored to have Mark Moffett joining us. He is an ecologist storyteller. He's a tropical biologist who studies ecology of tropical forest canopies and the social behavior of animals, especially ants. And of course, humans alongside of that. Mark received his PhD in organism and evolutionary biology from Harvard University, not too shabby, and in research, and also a research associate in the Department of Entomology at the National Museum of Natural History in the Smithsonian Institute. So he's also, in 2009, he helped curate the exhibition for Farmers Warriors, Builders of the Hidden Life of Ants, open at the National Museum of Natural History and the Smithsonian Institute, containing 40 or more of Mark's images. Wow, check that out. And Mark is a lecturer for the National Geographic Society. I can go on and on and on. The gentleman is a lot of fun, and he is commonly referred to as Dr. Bugs. All right, so welcome, Mark. We're delighted to have you over the moon.
Aaron, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm always pleased to talk about insects. Whether we're eating them or not. I mean, I like them both ways. I like to watch the live ones, but I also respect them as part of cuisine in many parts of the world. So we can talk about all kinds of stories.
Mm. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I mean, I remember when you published your book on ants. Remember, we already knew each other. That was a long time ago.
Yes, right. And I used to pop into your restaurant, and you're always in the back, and you would often have special things waiting for Melissa and I. I think insects you were able to buy in a market in New Jersey, some legitimate cuisine, Mexican cuisine, you'd work up just for us, not the other customers.
I have a funny story about that, but I'll wait until later to tell it.
Yeah, I think there's something to mention. While we're going to be on the subject of edible bugs and Mexican cooking, that's what we're really going to dive into today. You know, a couple of facts here. Most of Mexico's edible insects are caught wild. They're not farmed, then sold at regional markets or trucked into the larger cities. I think that's important to mention. There's not like, you know, this typical ant farm. There are ant farms out there, obviously, but for the majority in Mexico, they're caught wild. Let's go down some of the list, shall we, Mark and Mom, about sure. Which are the ones that are used commonly and eaten in Mexico. Let's start talking about gusanos, shall we? The most common, I think people, you know, they have that that image of that shitty mezcal with the maguey worm sort of festering on the bottom. And from my understanding, that was just done as a marketing tool to get gringos to taste crappy mezcal. What are your thoughts on the maguey worm?
I don't really have many thoughts. I don't really know if they do add to the flavor. I haven't tasted with and without. Maybe we should do kind of some kind of a research project there.
Yeah.
You know, it may be mostly for fun. I had a similar thing in China where I actually bought some ant wine, which had polyrhynchus ants at the bottom smashed up. And, you know, I don't know if they really added anything to the wine, but the label for the wine insisted that it improved your good looks. So, you know, I still tried it. But in both cases, I think it's more marketing than savoring the flavor of the bug.
Well, you know, and right now, they were telling me that in Oaxaca, the gusanos and maguey have taken off so much that they're restricted now. You know, the sales are controlled because a lot of people are using it mostly. Well, people usually serve them dried and smoked, maybe, you know, but and put them in sauces or in salts. And because there's the mezcal is often eaten with, you know, drunk with salt and now they're combining. Yeah, in oranges, they're combining the worm, you know, ground up with the salt, and they sell it, you know, to eat with a mezcal, to drink with a mezcal. So it's like,
yeah. And I think the reason because of that, Mom, is because the interest level in mezcal has grown exponentially, and people are starting to drink more mezcal, and then also understand to pair it with the maguey salt, which helps take a little bit of the edge off and gives this very earthy tone. And then mixed with the orange, it's just a beautiful combination of sourness and kind of bitterness as well. So, yeah, that's really how they're used. And maguey worms are considered grubs. So, you know, they can get nice and plump and juicy and fat, and they kind of explode in your mouth when you have one. Yeah, not for everybody, but definitely a great source of protein.
Yeah, it's true of bugs, grubs generally. They have a lot of, I mean, insects in general have a lot of nutrition, but they also have a lot of flavor. And it's always interesting to see how people respond negatively when they know what it is, but can actually get really excited about the flavor of the food when they're ignorant of what it is. I mean, people have this psychological barrier that is thrown up, which is really kind of bizarre to me. I mean, you can, if you're in the right frame of mind, you can say that the hamburger at your local shop is great and so forth because your friends all eat there and so forth. But if you blindfolded someone and gave them that hamburger and compared to anyone else's hamburger, they'd go, "This is terrible." But we psychologically build up these preconceptions for social reasons that don't have anything to do with the quality of the food. And that really shows up a lot with when we're talking about insects or spiders or other kinds of food.
Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful story to tell you. I think you were actually at this party when I gave that party for Oliver Sacks for his Oaxaca book. And I served this potato cakes with this worm sauce. And when I went to serve it to Oliver, he said, "And what are those?" And I said, "Well, these are little potato cakes with some worm sauce." He says, "We're eating worms?" You know, he loved all that kind of stuff. And I said, "Yes, we are." And I said, "Shall we tell everybody?" He says, No, let's just keep it to ourselves."
I love that. Worms are also great sources of protein. And we'll talk about this as we move on. But, you know, some of these insects are used as protein substitutes in vegan flours and batters, which a lot of people don't know that when you're having, you know, that little sort of pancake mix that's supposed to be vegan, a lot of times there's dried ground up insects in there.
Yeah, well, it's useful to know these kind of things because, in fact, I have a friend in the Department of Agriculture who once told me, you know, we can't exclude insects from human diets because they come into different kinds of foods. And if you work out the math, the average American eats about 2 pounds of insects a year, just tiny bits and pieces. So if you don't like insects, don't eat raisins. You know what those little creases are in the raisins? You don't know what's down there in those raisins, but in a lot of other things. The hops of beer have a lot of aphids in them. And it's these sources of food are actually quite healthy. When we look now at COVID coming out of the kingdom, probably from a bat or something, and things like mad cow disease and chicken flu and so forth, things that are related to us, the things that we generally eat, can transmit things to us because they have similar genetics. Insects are unlikely to do that. They're likely to be much more healthy, both because of that and because of their nutrition. They have less bones and inedible matter. They're just basically a raw protein and really delicious, as we said.
They are.
Do you know that book that I sent you, all those pages that I sent you from that book?
Yes.
I mean, she was my hero, you know, and I actually got to spend time with her in Mexico City. And she was like 98 when she died recently, but she wrote a book about feather art. She wrote a book about convent food. You know, she was this amazing, amazing woman.
Zarella, yes. So this is a published book in Spanish, obviously. Is it still available, or is it?
Well, I sent you a link. I couldn't believe that there was one for sale for $44 hardback on Amazon.
What is the book? Who's the author's name and all that for our listeners?
Okay, it's called Presencia de la Comida Prehispánica. You know, the food is about pre-Hispanic food. And there is by Teresa Castelo de Iturbide. She was related to the viceroy, you know, Agustín de Iturbide. Mm-hmm. But the book was published by Banamex. You know, it was one of those holiday gift books that they, beautiful books that they produce for the big clients who give them away or sell them or whatever they do. So, but anyway, there was one available on Amazon yesterday, right. I think.
That's awesome. Well, let's move on if we can, just because we have a lot of things. You know, it's been bugging me because we have a lot of different bugs to go over. So, I was waiting for the right time. Anyway, let's talk about chicatanas. No, shall we? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Bugs. This is the year that they come out after being dormant for 17 years, correct? Like, they're expecting a huge proliferation of chicatanas this year, no?
Yeah, well, it's a particular species that comes out every 17 years. There's another one that comes out every 13 and so forth. And they're, to the nature lover, they're quite exciting because they all give that love call together, and it's a summer of thrills for us. Other people might find it a bit annoying or terrifying, but they're harmless insects, and they are, in fact, very edible. They spend the vast majority of their lives underground as little larvae, so they have just one flight of fancy to find the female for a couple of weeks every 17 years. Talk about a hard love life. But they are, you know, generally roasted, right? And
Yeah.
Well, you know, in Veracruz, they're huge. They are roasted and they made it into the sauce. But it takes a while to get used to it because when they first come out, it kind of has like a urine smell, you know. So, but I just read the most fascinating thing in this book that I told you about, where you know when they're going to come out because they start cleaning the entrance to their what do you call it, nest?
Like a burrow, nest.
And they clean and then they decorate. They make the entrance bigger and then they decorate the entrance with green leaves. Which I think that's amazing. And but they come out and when the first rain hits every year, I think it's every year there, and the thing gets flooded and they have to come out.
Yeah, every year down in the tropics, generally many of them come out every year. Up here, what they're doing is they're trying to flood the predators, so no predator can possibly eat them all if they come out suddenly and all at once. So it's a strategy of survival. And down in the tropics where things are more steadily in terms of temperature and conditions, that strategy is less common, but you still see it sometimes. So that's the biological explanation. But it's just a strategy for the love life that I don't think I want to try.
Yeah, it's kind of like teenagers on spring break. You know, they're 17 and they're going out there to chase love. You know, and the chicatanas.
But you only get one chance.
You get only one shot at it, exactly. So we're talking about the chicatanas, of course, the giant winged ants. They do come out in the first rains of the season that hit Oaxaca, and then they're typically roasted. You know, and lime is added, and then they're ground into a paste with chili, salt, and garlic. They're added to moles as well. The salsa de chicatanas kind of resembles a tahini. And as my mom said, they can be a little bit off-putting with that flavor. I wouldn't say urine, mom. I would just say earthy. That way, that way we can so we don't dissuade our listeners, you know?
Do you remember that story when I had that chicken with the annatto paste and marimba? And the woman said, well, how does it taste? And I said, well, it's very earthy. So then later on, when I went to the table to check and see if she had liked the chicken, she says to me, yes, I loved it. It tasted just like dirt, just like you told me.
All right, so let's move on, because we're gonna save ants till the end, okay, Mark? So you can wax poetically.
Oh, tasty stuff, yes.
We're going to leave that to the end so you can wax poetically off of that. But right now, I want to talk about an interesting bug that I think you also know a lot about, Mark, obviously, are escamoles, right? Now, escamoles are one of my favorite things to eat. I find it a huge delicacy. Every time I have escamoles, I tend to be in Mexico City for whatever reason. I always find them there. They proliferate heavily in Puebla between March and May, which is the escamole season in that particular part of Mexico. They're ant eggs. That's what we're talking about. Let's expand a little bit about that, Mark, shall we?
Well, ant eggs are actually really a pure type of food. And so in different parts of the world, I sent Zarella a video of Cambodia, where there's a whole village that focuses entirely on collecting ant legs to make omelets. And the omelets are healthier than chicken omelets. And you can buy these eggs in the market. And they are very rich flavored, not like the adult ants, which are spicy. But definitely good for you. They're a little tricky to collect because the ants don't like you taking their eggs. So if you are not fond of ant bites, you might find it a bit uncomfortable. You might leave that to somebody else.
You know that they told me, I read one of her description of the escamoles as looking like a puffed rice.
Yeah, well, that's what they certainly look like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're very creamy. Of course, you know, if you go to Mexico City, there's a very famous pre-Hispanic restaurant, Fonda Don Chong, that, you know, specializes in pre-Hispanic food, and they tend to have escamoles quite often. I've had them actually in a taco, very simply with guacamole, and just that beautiful combination. They kind of creamy, cancel each other out. You have the creamy guacamole and avocado with these creamy escamoles, and it just makes for a really wonderful bite. Ant eggs.
How about humiles, honey?
What's that one?
Humiles, a big delicacy, and they're very they grow on trees, and they sell them alive in little leaf packages, and people either toast them and season it. One favorite thing to do is toast them and combine it with chili, and into a salt, like a seasoning blend that you can put all over.
Just Egg is now the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based consumers in your doors with easy-to-use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat, and it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Just Egg makes a delicious plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble. Great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also a frozen pre-baked folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andres calls Just Egg mind-blowing, and Bon Appetit says, it's so good, I feel guilty eating it. Put the fastest-growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/hrn.
I think we should just touch upon this because it's such a novel idea of fly eggs. Okay. Now, this is something that is considered, you know, Aztec caviar, believe it or not. It's cultivated a lot in Mexico City. You can imagine, you know, Tenochtitlan back in the day, Aztec people were eating fly eggs. I've had them actually in cakes where they're taking the fly eggs and they've kind of cooked them down and then made these almost little fly egg cakes, and they were actually very delicious. Do you know anything about that by chance, Martin?
No, I haven't heard about that in Mexico. However, this is one of the few European instances of eating insects. There was actually something down in parts of Europe called walking cheese that was popular for a long time, has gone out of popularity, I'm afraid. And that was cheese that would move across your plate because it had live larvae in it trying to escape you. So the youngsters aren't taking to that anymore. Maybe there's still a possibility of retaining that kind of cultural purity in Mexico.
Well, they are. They actually do sell those things still in Oaxaca and Mexico City as well.
Yep, and they're actually they're kind of popular also in Michoacan, from my understanding as well. All right, so we talked about the novelty water fly eggs, right? Now let's talk a little bit about champurines, shall we?
Oh my God!
All right, we're going to talk about grasshoppers, okay? And then we're going to move it to ants. Okay, now let's go. Let's open it up for champurines, everyone.
That's the first insect I ate. Well, no, I used to eat the acorn worms too, because at the ranch there were acorns. And you'd bite them, sometimes you'd squish into the little worm. But the grasshoppers are fabulous. They go out into the field to catch them in nets and early in the morning or in the evening. And then they come home and pour boiling water over them to kill them and wash them. And then they let them dry. And then they saute it in lard or oil with garlic, chili powder, and lime. And that's one of the ways that they're sold. But then those are the really little ones. But then they also do the bigger, like beetle, you know, the bigger grasshoppers, and they dry them out and after they kill them, and then they're sold in one piece, you know. So they're it's quite a crunchy little delicacy.
Yeah, and I think you gave us some of those at least once at your restaurant when we dropped by. And the grasshoppers are among the most tasty insects and one of the most universally liked insects to eat. Grasshoppers, crickets, katydids, that general family of things. And they do have that kind of nutty crunchiness to them if you cook them the right way. Do Mexicans eat termites? That's something that's commonly eaten in Africa because they have those big termite mounds. I don't know if they eat termites.
I don't know if it's by that name, but I'm seeing one right here in the middle of the wood. It's called a chinche de monte. I guess we do,
but it's probably somewhere.
What is the botanical name?
The zoological name. Termites are in English termitidae. So yeah, it's
termitidae.
I would suspect you eat them somewhere. In fact, you know, I should mention that I was at a conference once in China. The conference was alternative foods for a sustainable future.
Nice.
And so the Chinese invited me to Beijing, and it was co-hosted by the Italians and the Chinese, and they were continuously arguing about pasta, because the Chinese couldn't believe the Italians did this to pasta, and Italians were disgusted by what the Chinese did to pasta. But the actual conference was on things like who eats the most insects, and guess who eats the most insects around the world?
Chinese.
Nope, not quite.
No, the Thai.
The Thai matched the Mexicans. Both of them ate something like 100 species.
Aha!
And so both the Thais and the Mexicans ate a great diversity of insects.
I got that, Mark. I get a gold star, man.
They also had a session on who eats rat. And, you know, I've had a little rat myself. There's a story there which I can go into. But let's just say that rat is a sustainable food source, particularly perhaps in New York, if you wanted it to be. I just saw a rat in the subway, and it was so brazen that it was just sitting there looking at me. And a guy turned the corner, and he saw the rat, and he leapt up in the air, and the rat leapt up in the air under him. And so they did this marvelous leaping thing that looked like a dance. And it was the greatest thing I'd seen in New York in the whole COVID period. And I congratulated the man on his great rat dance afterwards. And he was quite pleased with himself. So it has nothing to do with food, but I thought I'd mention it.
Well, apparently there's 8 rats to every human in New York City. So just to a fun little fact there. But yeah, I think you mentioned the idea of grasshoppers. Look, I go to Thailand every year. That's why I know that. It's inevitably that you go to a market. If you go to the Chak Ko Chak market in Bangkok, you can see a whole area of just insects. Sold live, dried, any way you can imagine, they got them. So, yes, there's a lot of kinship between the Thais and Mexicans, I guess, when it comes to consuming insects. The chapulines, you know, they're typically used, as we said, you know, you go to markets in Mexico, you find them in different sizes and different kind of almost weight categories. They could be very small and kind of feeble. Then you kind of go into the middle ground, and then you got the big suckers that are kind of, there's a little more challenging to eat. But at my restaurant, Johnny Sanchez here in New Orleans, by the way, 9:30 Poitras, in case any of you guys are interested.
Oh, please.
We do take out, by the way. You can have our guacamole with or without champolines, with or without grasshoppers. So just if you want to have a little bit of fun.
It's really just like eating a lobster. I'm really surprised people are familiar with eating lobsters, which are much bigger and just as weird looking as any insect. And so it's certainly a psychological barrier that's actually hard to explain, because a large grasshopper and a lobster are not that different. And the grasshopper may have actually more edible food if you've ever struggled with a lobster.
in the turn of the 20th century, prisoners were giving lobster. It was so plentiful as a meal, believe it or not. Lobster was given away.
Change in attitude. And we're probably, you know, we're going to have to go that way to some degree, just because eating insects is a far less disastrous to the food chain, to the environment, and so forth. So in the long term, whether we like it or not, we're going to change our diets, and actually we'll end up liking it. And it's going to be, going to just be good all around.
I was reading that most insects have about 95% pure protein.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you go to Australia, for example, Australians are familiar with this whole idea, even those from Europe. So you'll walk along in Australia up in Queensland, and one will say, "Hey, do you know these ants?" And they'll reach up and pull off this little green ant and say, "Try one," and they'll just eat it. So, you know, it became an everyday thing for Australians to take on what was originally this Aborigine piece of their diet. And it's good for you. And frankly, honeybees. Okay, we're eating honey. This is bee vomit. I don't know if you really want to hear that, but, you know, they're regurgitating this stuff. So, come on. Lighten up about insects.
They had a wonderful anecdote here. There's a variety of ant that all they eat is honey. And they go back to their nest, and they give their honey mouth-to-mouth to the other worker ants, who then go put them in a storage area, and then they dry out, and the people there get a tree branch that has resin on it, and put it in the nest so that the honey ones adhere to this nest, and they sell them, you know, to the stick, and they sell them in the market, and people have them as candy, you know, because they're so sweet, and then they actually, after they dry off, they're sold, you know, sort of loose as candy.
Wow.
Awesome. Well, actually, I got to throw this in. There's in the Bible, there's something called manna from heaven. Is the sweet excretions of a kind of an insect that they used to eat in the Middle East. And so it's right in the Bible.
So let's talk about your love affair with ants, Mark. And when did that begin? Because I know a lot of people have that fond memory of an ant farm. I think this generation does not know, you know, how cool an ant farm was. Because I had one, and I could sit there mesmerized looking at the ants all day. Basically, an ant farm is like a little piece of two pieces of glass with different kind of sand and different things. You can watch the little ants burrow and create a little colony. Where did your love start with it?
Well, it started as it did for with you, Aaron, or Zarella, probably when you were like in diapers at the age of 6 months out in the backyard watching things. We all started off watching ants. And why did we do that? Because ants are always doing stuff. They're not just sitting there like a dog licking themselves once every half hour. Or most other animals. Have you ever tried watching a cow very long? Most large animals are boring. But ants, they're fighting. They're building highways. They're retrieving things. They're working in groups. They're having warfare. Ants are cool. And they're really a lot more like humans than we give them credit for, because we are expected to outgrow watching ants. And I showed commitment. I did not give up. You know, you guys are failures because you stopped. So that's my story. And I just kept watching ants. And my parents go, "You sure this is a paying job?" And I go, "Well," and so I sort of I convinced them anyway. And so I've continued to watch ants, and I've continued to be thrilled by the similarities they can show to humans and their industry and their and all the variety of behaviors they show, and their tastiness in the right places.
Absolutely. And ants are found all over Mexico, incidentally, and as well, they're kind of treated in the same way a grasshopper would be, where there's different weights and different sizes of them available at marketplaces and in mercados. Let's talk a little bit about how ants are used, Mom, in different dishes in Mexico.
Well, I think most of the ones that I've been reading about is they either are put into a sauce like a you know with a. Mm-hmm. With tomatillo, let's say, for instance, and maybe some guajillo chili. So that's one way that they have them. Or toasted and ground up and made into the spice paste. Or like the escamoles are actually cooked in red chili sauce or green chili sauce. You know, some of those cooking sauces like the caldillo, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that type of thing. And seasoned, you know, and served with tortillas. I mean, that's basically the way that they're used. I mean, some of them are sold individually to eat as snacks.
Yes. I'd like to use them. I think they're a great textural component to a dish, as a garnish for a taco, for instance.
So are these ants the kind of rusty red-colored ones that collect the leaves?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those leafcutter ants are actually eaten famously down in Colombia, and you cook the really big ones, the queens. Do you have those in Mexico as well, which are roasted and are kind of nutty flavored as well?
Yeah. Yep.
And then in Venezuela, they have, if you go to the average restaurant, they have a little bottle of hot sauce with ant heads at the bottom. Those are the same ant, and they add a lot of spice. You know, ants have that formic acid when they sting you, and that's actually spicy, like citrus, and so it adds a lot of pizzazz to things. Those kind of ants, those leaf-cutting ants, the ones that carry the leaves around, are the most popular foods among Latin Americans, I think, generally. Probably the same ones in Mexico, but I bet you probably eat some other kinds of ants as well. I don't know.
Wow.
There are a big variety here in this book.
Yeah. I love that.
No, but they're basically all prepared kind of the same way. You know, toasted and ground up, or toasted and sold like as is, or toasted and boiled. I don't think that there are many things that they just add the worms to, the live worms to, the sauce to. Have you seen that?
No.
No, I have not, Mom. For our listeners out there, because now after hearing this very intriguing podcast, which I hope we've done a good job of describing a little bit of sort of the variance in the insect world of edible insects, how they relate to Mexican cooking. Mark, what would be your suggestion for people to seek out the home cook? How can you get your hands on some bugs, some edible bugs?
Well, I'm no expert there. I do know that when I see these things in restaurants in the States, they're often sort of a gimmick. It's like going to China and going to a remote place and asking for a hamburger. You just don't do that. So
yeah.
It is something where it really pays to really know the cuisine as it really is to visit Mexico. So I think everybody should escape COVID lockdown and get down to your territory, Zarello, as soon as possible. One of the great cuisine areas of Mexico, for sure. But here in New York, you can cook various things with mealworms. You can go away from insects and look at earthworms. I've had to eat those in a couple of trips when we ran out of food. And, you know, they can be quite tasty as well. I have a good story or two about that. It takes too long. We were stuck in the bottom of the sinkhole for 3 days.
Wow.
I've never tried cooking insects myself, so I would suggest I will give Zarella's number at the end of the podcast, and you can all call her up.
Yes.
If you bring me the insects, I'll cook them.
Yeah.
I think even in Mexico, even one of the least likely sounding insects to eat, the stink bug comes up every once in a while because it really is pungent. It'll add a knockdown flavor to things. You don't want to add too much of it. But I know people who study flavor and odors, and you know the stink bug smell that you smell in a stink bug is the same smell as cut grass. It's just highly concentrated. So you cut that back enough, and you can do all kinds of things with it in a cuisine. And Mexicans, I think, include some of those in their diet as well. So anything, you can try all kinds of things.
I just learned a word from you. But the thing is that when you were talking about the smell of grass, I just learned a word that I'm crazy about. It's called petrichor, which is the smell of rain and the earth after the first rain. Is that not the fabulous word?
That is a great word, and it probably could work in a cuisine somewhere too.
Absolutely. I mean, there are 88 different species of edible beetles in Mexico. Just to kind of bring you up to speed on that, the name for the edible beetle is called it looks like a Nahuatl word, chawi. It almost has a little bit of a fishy flavor. They're also called escarabajos, which would be like a scarab, exactly. They're typically found in places like Hidalgo, Tabasco, Guerrero, Veracruz, Oaxaca, Puebla, Chiapas, and of course, Nayarit, in case you were wondering.
And you know, so what they do as well, the bigger beetles and scarabs, they make them into jewelry. You know, and then they have the little crystal eyes and everything. It's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see those in museums even, some of the classic pieces of jewelry, the necklaces and so forth.
Now, Mark, can you tell our listeners what you're working on, any projects, how they can get in touch with you and engage with you?
Yes. My website is www.drbugs, doctor spelled out bugs. Mm-hmm. So you can figure out how to contact me there. So I do all kinds of things. I'm a explorer, so I go around the world looking for strange and weird creatures. I'm very good at finding them. I've published a lot of things in National Geographic, but I also look at the social lives of different creatures. So I've had a book, Zarella knows, Adventures Among Ants, and another one now on the human swarm, about human societies and how societies stay together and fall apart. Things on rainforests and so forth. I am I'm an escape artist. If you want to get out of town and do something cool, that's you talk to me. I figure out how to do that. Unfortunately, this whole COVID thing has slowed me down quite a bit. I'm supposed to be in West Africa right now, darn it. So never mind. I'll get there eventually. I would like to get down to Mexico as well. Even Mexico City has some fabulous, of course, restaurants and things, and I've never been.
Well, I would love to take you. I could take you down there as well, Dr. Bugs, Señor Mark. Will you be open to doing guided tours to some of these locations?
Well, with a small enough group, a lot of these things are kind of tricky if you have more than six or eight people.
Okay.
And certainly studying the cuisine in Mexico up in the mountains and some of the areas you guys know well would be an intriguing thing for me. So maybe you should do the guiding, or maybe we can both do the guiding and I can point out the monkeys and you can point out the spices. So
that would work
pretty nicely.
I remember one thing that when you proposed to Melissa.
Yes. Oh.
That you said, she said, why should I marry you? And you said, because I will make you bring your coffee every day to your bed, and I'm going to take you to places that you will never be without me, be able to go without me.
I have done that, and I've really fallen short the last year. We've been all stuck in the same apartment, and Melissa works in the medical industry, so she's been manning the phones, trying to get all the things going for doctors to work out. And I, you know, entomologists aren't very useful right now, I found out. So I'm just making the coffee. That's all I'm doing for the moment. But I'm gearing up for some expeditions again and writing some things and just to hopefully things are going to get back to normal as the summer progresses now, because I'm ready to go out and try some great restaurants, even in New Orleans, by the way.
Well, please come down and visit. We'd love to have you. I have extra space in my house, so you're more than welcome to stay with us. You know, the Mexicans invented mi casa, su casa. That's not, you know, the Swedish didn't come up with that, okay? So we're very open to having guests. And I want to remind everybody, all of our listeners, how to get in touch with Mark Moffitt. You can reach him at mark@drbugs.com, and doctor is spelled out, as he said. Or you can go to his website, www.drbugs.com. And please, we really encourage and implore everyone that's listening to support Edible Bugs and support them and seek them out. Go to markets on your travels and bring them back with you. Put them in your suitcase and bring them back and enjoy them. Because that's how I get my insects back from Mexico. I literally am a bug mule. I'm a mule that brings bugs across country lines. So make sure that you guys do that. Yeah. I'm staying here first, Mark. Well,
fabulous. I'll meet you at the airport next time.
We'll have a shady transaction at the luggage department. You know, we'll exchange bugs.
Well, anyway, thank you so much, Mark, you know, for joining us. I mean, I haven't laughed this much in probably the whole year of COVID, you know, so I really, really appreciate you coming here and sharing all your wonderful knowledge and making me laugh. It was so wonderful. Thank you so much.
I'm bored with serious people, Zarella. Let's go find some fun ones.
Gracias, Mark. Everyone, again, we've been talking about edible bugs and Mexican cooking. Our guest today, Mark Moffitt, just an amazing gentleman, lovingly known as Dr. Bugs. Please seek him out. And please seek out more episodes of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. Thank you so much.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.